This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome all to K-Drama School. I'm your host, Grace Jung, and class is now in session. A few show date announcements. On December 1st, Monday, I will be in Brooklyn at a venue called Crystal Lake to participate in the Not a Boy, Not a Girl comedy show, which starts at 7:30. Then on Thursday, December 18th, I will be at the Sugar Maple at 8 p.m. to participate in the Hotties Only comedy show that's in Milwaukee. And I really look forward to seeing you there. For those of you who have been following this podcast on YouTube, as you can see, my hair is a different color. Yeah, I am currently not in Wisconsin. I'm in New York at my parents' house visiting for Thanksgiving break. I'm just here to get my hair done. Yeah, that's why I came. I flew out to the East Coast so that I could find a well-trained Korean hairstylist who could bleach my hair in the color that I want. Because for some reason, bleaching my hair to the beautiful platinum blonde that I always wanted to be is, I mean, it's a chore. I don't know. It seems like very few stylists on earth is able to do this. So yeah, I flew out here to the East Coast so that I could do some hair stuff, and I just reached out to some Korean stylists, the one that was available. They were in Fort Lee, New Jersey. Yeah, I went in for my hair appointment at 10 a.m., and my stylist was 15 minutes late, and then I was there until 4:30 p.m., so the hair that you see now took over 6 hours. Am I happy with it? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Every time I get my hair done, I am not happy with it. No. Why? Because I was sitting in that chair for 5 to 6 hours and I shelled out hundreds of dollars. Okay. But in this particular case, like, I'm not extremely unhappy. It's more like my satisfaction is at like a 65. Okay. Because, well, I'm not blonde, as you can see. The toner that she applied is extremely dark. She did not give me a choice or an option when it came to the toner. She just, like, decided to do whatever she wanted. Also, after it was complete, I noticed that, like, there were some strands here that looked like they were burnt. It looked as if somebody took a match and burnt off edges of my hair. And I literally had to go downstairs, find a pair of scissors, and start snipping away at the damaged edges. Like, what the fuck is going on? I think what I'm being told by the universe, or by my body, you know, by my hair follicles, I think they're just literally saying, Grace, you can't keep bleaching your hair anymore. Like, you're done. Okay? Like, enough. You've poisoned your hair enough. You've bleached it out enough. Just stop it already. Try something else. Just adjust to the fact that not enough people on this planet besides Juhi can get your hair to be bleached the color that you want it to be. See, the thing about Juhi though in LA, like, not only was she a great colorist, but she was also a great stylist. She was able to cut my hair in a way that made me feel beautiful. And then she was able to blow it out in a way that made me feel beautiful. When I was leaving the salon today, I did not feel all of those good things. And the stylist could tell. She knew she fucked up. She apologized. And then she sent me off with two hair products. So I got those two things. And I was like, you know, I just smiled, like, you know, kept it going with good graces, and I said, it's fine, it's okay. And then I get home and the lighting is not as good, and I'm just like, what the fuck, my hair looks like shit. Yeah, folks, if you have not purchased my book, K-Drama School, A Pop Culture Inquiry into Why We Love Korean Television, I don't know what's stopping you. I gave two wonderful book talks this weekend, one in Ossining at Hudson Valley Books for Humanity, another at Big Red Books in Nyack. Both were great. I met some really wonderful, wonderful people. Helen Park was an amazing panelist with me on Friday evening in Ossining. It was just a really excellent time. And then I also met another author named Gail Hovey, who wrote a book about queerness and sexual trauma and overcoming all of that, all the while you know, while affiliated with the church. So, like, heavy stuff, but she and I had a lot to talk about. And then I met her friend Sandy, who's part of her LGBTQIA plus community here in Rockland County. And I didn't even know that it was around, but apparently there was like a pride community, a queer pride community in Rockland County since the 80s. Yeah, I did not know this. And they also have like a BIPOC meetup group that also happens. So shout out to Rockland Pride. You guys are amazing and I'm glad that you exist. Folks, today I'm going to be talking about the show Bon Appetit, Your Majesty. And this show is special because it not only did it break ratings records for TVN during its airing, but it also stars a beloved K-pop star, Imuna, of SM's K-pop girl group, Girls' Generation. And they are, of course, a staple in the K-pop zeitgeist. And Imuna is not only special for this show, Bon Appetit, Your Majesty, but just like a year or two ago, she blew everybody out of the water with King the Land. Remember that? And I do remember saying this before, but Imuna is an excellent actress because she can not only fold together comedic timing with drama, but she just has like a very refreshing presence. Whenever she's on screen, she's just clear, very smooth, just very deliberate, just on. And I never grow tired of her. She's just really, really excellent at what she does. So yeah, just natural born talent, born to be a performer. She has been acting for quite a long time too. So she made her K-pop debut in 2007 along with Girls' Generation, and she was the central figure of that girl group. But then she made her acting debut for the show You Are My Destiny just a year later. In 2008, she starred in that show. And it was like one of those like multiple episodics. It had like 170-something episodes. Like, it went on for a really long time. So maybe it was like a serialized daily drama. Like, it was one of those like Yeonsukguk kind of things. And yeah, she just killed it and blew everybody out of the water with that one. Just everybody, you know, just gave her a bunch of awards, says she's terrific, yada, yada, yada. Imuna is a very impressive performer. I guess that is my point. And this show, Bon Appetit, Your Majesty, is, I guess, special because it fuses mukbang with K-drama in a very interesting kind of way. But it's also like showing these creative fusions between Korean cuisine and French techniques. And then it's as if the sort of like time travel element, when Imuna's character as the chef travels back in time to the Joseon dynasty, and she's cooking for these chefs using these techniques from France and dropping, you know, phrases, like French phrases for these cooking techniques. It's as if like she's teaching Korea back then what they will be encountering at some point in the future. It's like a really weird kind of way of like reappropriating French cooking techniques and then making them Korean with the fusion stuff and then selling it to Joseon Dynasty Korea. And then it's like Joseon Dynasty Korea is like recording those things as facts and then bring it into the future. It has some like weird quantum physics, past, present, future are all one kind of theorizing that is happening in a very camp K-drama-esque kind of way. Folks, today I am going to be talking to my good buddy Jason Kutz, who is a musician. He is a songwriter, a producer. He plays instruments. His main thing is piano. So he's a jazz pianist, but he's also part of a couple of bands. He's part of Mr. Chair, a Madison-based jazz trio band. He is also part of a new group called Spectaculous, and they really are spectacular. It's this new band that like hybridizes classical with punk rock with...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hip-hop with slam poetry, with experimental jazz, with... It is its own thing. Like, if you say this might be jazz, then it's alternative to jazz. If you say this is rock, then it's alternative to rock. If you say this is hip hop, it's alternative to hip hop. It is its own genre, and their new album is available now, so you could get Spectaculous wherever you get your music. It's available on Spotify, YouTube Music, wherever else. I really, really strongly recommend that you get this album. It's amazing. The music on that album is terrific. Jason and his group, they're also terrific. Mr. Chair is also an amazing group. I saw them play at least a couple of times when I got to Madison. If you live in Madison, you probably have heard them at least once. They play all over. I know that they do play at Coda. They played at Fête du Marquette. They play all over. And on November 29th, the weekend of Thanksgiving, I guess this weekend, yeah, you're listening to this weekend, on November 29th, they'll be playing at Orpheum Theater. And what are they going to be playing? They're going to be playing Charlie Brown's Christmas music, okay? And it's going to be amazing. So, without further ado, let's have a chat with my good buddy, Jason Kutz.
I missed it.
Yeah, we played at the Mallard Stadium on Saturday night for True North Festival. Yeah, did you hear about that?
You told me about it that night. We were shooting pool, and then I put it in my calendar.
Yeah.
But it didn't write the full context, so I was just confused.
Yeah.
But I was like, it's probably Jason's gig.
Yeah. Yeah, it was sweet. It was like one stage, five bands, 20 or so food vendors. And that was it. Just the music. There was a DJ, DJ Phil Money, who played in between all the bands. And then food vendors that had like a couple bites to eat. And it was awesome. It was super fun.
Yeah.
My buddy Pete, who you know, he was making a alien. It's like a robot alien. It's like a alien on top of a RC tank, essentially. It's like a lawn ornament alien, so it, like, you usually stick it in your lawn.
And
then like it kind of just like moves as people come up to it, and it makes noises. And so he cut the legs off of that, and then we built a saucer that attached on top of this RC
nice
tank.
Yeah.
So that was on stage with us, but we played at like 5 p.m. And then when the sun went down, there's also like LEDs all inside and the eyes light up.
Oh my God.
So when the sun went down, the saucer on this tank was, he was just like driving it around the crowd.
Oh.
It was almost the hit of the whole festival.
Of course.
It was so fun. Everybody was taking selfies with it. And so we were just like driving, we were like standing like 50 yards back and just driving around this RC alien and watching people interact with it. It was
nice.
So fun.
Yeah. And that's appropriate at the Mallard Stadium because they have Space Cowboys as the alter ego to the Mallards.
Oh, what is that?
Or Space Cows, rather.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Or that's like their old mascot or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Interesting. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Madison did have alien encounters.
Oh.
In 1987.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think that's
1987?
1987.
What happened?
I think they just had some alien sightings in Madison in that year. That was very like prominent and it was like a big deal and it like made the news, a local news. And then I think that became like a thing, like a little gimmick for the town.
Mm.
So it used to be Madison Muskies and then they changed to
Space Cows.
Space Cows.
Oh, Space Cows. Yeah.
And then they changed to
the Mallards.
The Mallards.
Wow.
So this alien craft was very appropriate.
Yeah, totally. I didn't know. Although we were like piecing it together because it came in parts to the stadium. And so we're putting it together. And another member of the People Brothers band, he like walked in and saw us and he was like, oh my God. And he had like an alien, like the classic alien head necklace on. And
wow.
He goes, I saw my first UFO last night.
Yeah.
It's like, all right. I feel like I'm too far away from this. Do you want me to be like up on it so it sounds good?
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
Cool. I can do that.
Yeah, that's good.
Does it extend?
Chick, chick, chick. Unfortunately, that's like the farthest it extends.
Yeah, okay. I'll just like straddle the
table. If you want to switch mics, we could do that too.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, that works great. Thank you.
Yep.
So I wanted to ask you this, maybe we talked about it at some point, I don't know, because we have, when we hang out, it's like a lot of information, and then we like don't see each other for a bit, and then a lot of information, and then it's like, oh, did we talk about this? But I was wondering, do you know the band, John Lurie's band, which is now failing me, the Lounge Lizards? Do you know the Lounge Lizards?
No.
Okay, so I like at some point I'd actually love for you to hear them because John Lurie, like self-taught musician in New York in like 70s 80s and part of that indie music and filmmaking scene, and he played like the horn, he played mostly the horn, like saxophone, like wind stuff. And he had this band called the Lounge Lizards, and they were like kind of big in the scene, like in a kind of like art house sophisticated way. And when they asked him like, what kind of music is this? He was like, it's fake jazz.
Fake jazz.
He did not consider himself like a jazz musician, but when you listen to it, it has like jazzy flavor, but it's not quite jazz.
Yeah. Do you like have the means to play any of this?
Do I have the mean? I mean,
does stuff go through back in? It does, of course.
Probably does. I'm just like, I haven't tried it before.
That's okay. I'm curious. It sounds a little familiar, but Lounge Lizards.
Yeah, I think
so he was leading that band.
Or Voice of Chunk, that's like a big one. I could play a little bit of it. This is called Bob the Bob.
It's great. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Piano, bass, sax, drums. Guitar maybe? This is rad. I like this a lot.
I thought you'd dig it, because I was like, when I listen to you and you guys play with Mr. Chair, like, I kind of get, I'm like, oh, he kind of reminds me, they kind of remind me of, like, John Lurie's style, like, back then.
But I love it.
But more, you guys have a little more levity, like, a little more lightness. Yeah.
Lightness is good. That's actually, that's a comment that we make on ourselves regularly, which is, we have to keep it light. Yeah, and it's not always. Like, I like playing heavy stuff, too. But the feeling of being light, I mean, I'm, like, nursing this shoulder. It's been crazy couple weeks of doing things, and I can just feel I'm tense, whether it's at the piano or the computer, just, like, feeling tension in my shoulder is, like, messed up right now. And if I was being lighter... it would not be so bad.
So it gets tense because you go to the dark place?
Not even the dark place. It's just like, it just, if you, it's like, it takes a lot of effort to perform. And you work constantly at, when you're getting ready to perform, at relaxing and making it easy. You, what you have to do is if you have to be virtuosic, you have to make that virtuosity feel easy. So you practice that, but it's so much easier said than done. And so, yeah, inevitably when I perform, I like hunch over and tense up my shoulders. And, and then I also get like hyper-focused. Right now I'm arranging tons of string parts for Charlie Brown. Charlie Brown Christmas, and when I'm like sitting at the computer just and hyper focusing for hours just doing computer work, I just know that I'm holding tension there.
And then
holding space.
When you're in that hyper focused space, it's like hard to break out of it and take a break, right?
Yeah, and you have to like a good technique is actually to like just set a timer. And then when the timer goes off, you just take a break and just plan it, put it in, make some thing that reminds you to.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Relax. And so every minute, if it goes off, you can just think, okay, I'll chill out.
It's kind of like those, I don't know, those timed meditations. They add a bell like every 5 minutes. And then the bell is like a nice indicator of like, oh, like, did you drift off? Are you tense? Are you, you know?
Tune back in. Yeah, exactly.
This is interesting.
Do you have a bell over here?
No, but I have a bell like right by the entrance with the little elephant things. There's a little bell at the bottom. So sometimes that rings. But yeah, bells are good. I hear bells are like good for the heart chakra. So it opens up your heart. Or helps you connect your mind to your heart when you feel disconnected. Like a bell is a good instrument.
It's a pretty old instrument. It's got to be rooted in our like evolution to, I mean, a dinner bell, cowbells.
Yeah.
I actually have some pretty cool cowbells.
Yeah.
My my good friend and another patron and lover of music, Tom Newyar, he was traveling in Italy and in like the mountains, the Alps, and there's a guy that was like handcrafting bells. Mm-hmm. And what he would do is he makes certain bells for specific farmers. So every farmer in the area has their own unique sound.
Oh, hell yeah.
So you can like hear the sound of your cows from these bells that this guy, one guy, is hand making.
It's amazing.
So he got two little, like a smaller one and a larger one, mm-hmm. of these little cowbells, and they're just so beautiful.
Yeah.
I didn't know I should have brought them.
Yeah. And but, it's like, you know, oh, that's Farmer Dan, or that's Farmer George.
Exactly. Or you know, Merrill. Farmer Dan's like, oh, damn, that's my cow. Like, like jumps down the mountain.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, because we do associate, like, I mean, for instance, like, I hear this about birds. Like, birds, like a bird's, the mother bird has a specific sound that is synced up to each bird individually. Mm. So when the bird, mother bird, makes a certain noise, one of the birds knows it's them. Mm. And they respond to that call.
It's kind of like how we talk with dogs.
Yeah.
Do you have pets? No, there's no pets.
Not here, anymore, right? No.
You did?
I did, as a child.
As a child?
I had a dog.
You had a dog? Mm-hmm. Do you like other dogs now?
I love dogs, yeah.
Yeah, so like, if do you have friends with dogs that you see like somewhat regularly? Mm-hmm. Like, you kind of, I feel like I'm noticing this, is I talk with certain dogs a certain way, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, Momo. She gets her interaction from me, but because she's a little bulkier, she needs a little more meat.
Yeah.
Whereas Penny, she has like, it's like,
princess
very
vibes.
Very sensitive. Exactly. Very sensitive princess vibes. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Dogs each have their own personality too. Mm-hmm. They bring their own little thing.
We do that with humans too.
Yeah. Totally. We have names.
Yeah.
You know?
Styles of talking to each other.
Yeah. And then there's, styles of talking to each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It's, like, interesting how, like, certain boundaries can be, you know, bypassed through certain styles of speaking to one another. Mm-hmm. I noticed that with, like, swearing a lot. Like, the moment I hear somebody curse around me, I feel a little more comfortable with them.
Oh, yeah? Because you curse a lot.
I curse so fucking much. It's a problem, actually.
Yeah, me too.
But the moment I hear it, I'm like, ugh. One of mine. Okay, yeah, cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, but you can turn it up. You can turn it off.
No.
No?
I struggle.
Yeah.
I have to be very mindful, but it's a struggle. I'm trying to.
When you were teaching, did you?
I cursed a lot.
Did you? It's all right. It's good.
But the thing is, when I was in college, a lot of my professors also like cursed, you know. They would say the F word, or they would say shit, they would say fuck, you know. And I would be like totally fine with it. But
I feel like in film there's that seems more reasonable than
than like economics.
Yeah. Well, definitely. But even in some of the other like art forms. Like it's not, music is still like, sure, it might happen every once in a while, but it's not typical. But if I had to just be judgmental, I would imagine that in film, it just feels like something that's like, there's like a freedom of language in film that, you know, I think is open to that.
I like this observation because it's like the film production set likens a military set. So, and even like cameras, like the camera body, not anymore, but back in the day, that metal alloy or whatever is like the same as what they made guns with.
Oh, wow.
So, and it's shooting gun, shooting film.
Yep.
And that hierarchy, like the director, producer, the director of photography at the top, and nobody knows what they're discussing, what decisions they're going to make. And then everybody else is called below the line. So you have crew, screenwriter, actors, you know, gaffer, whatever, all of those people are below the line. And there's a very rigid hierarchy on a production set, just like in the military. And in both places, people cuss a lot.
Interesting. Are there guns? Are there things called guns? I know there's shotgun mics, but are there other gun, that word in like,
I'm sure there are. like I think like a like an archival film dork would be able to answer these questions with a lot more detail. Yeah. But I'm not of that ilk.
Me neither.
Does all the material. So okay, I have to ask you this. You play the piano, you know, that's your primary instrument, but when did you know that the piano was for you?
So there's like a handful of kind of moments in my life when it seemed cool. Mm-hmm. Like I was taking lessons, and probably pretty shortly after I took lessons, there was like a recital at my school. Mm-hmm. And I saw my best friend was also playing. Mm-hmm. And then a guy that was a year older than me. Mm. And they were both way better than I was. And I was like, and they were playing fast. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Mm. So that was maybe when I was 7, 8 or so. Then, and my mom is a pianist. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of music in my family. So mm-hmm. I was constantly growing up with that. But I got way more interested in like guitar and drums mm-hmm. than I was in piano.
Makes sense.
And I quit piano.
Oh.
When I was 15 or so.
Oh.
And then.
Because you wanted to play drums and guitar? Yeah.
I was like, piano's not cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was like listening to punk. Mm-hmm. Music and nobody like, in there was bands? Playing at the time was like the first bands that were really standing out to me were Against Me. You know them?
No.
Against Me, Anti-Flag, Coheed and Cambria. When I discovered Coheed and Cambria, that kind of changed my life. It was like the first prog rock that I really like absolutely loved. Mm-hmm. The Mars Volta. Hmm. Those were that was all kind of like late high school. Mm. Around the time when I quit piano. Mm-hmm. And I went to a summer camp that was it's like a musical theater camp, very light, non-competitive musical theater.
Okay.
And my counselor wanted to sing a song. Who's now one of my best friends, he wanted to sing a song for his now wife at a talent show. Mm. And it was a Billy Joel song. Mm-hmm. And it was She's Always a Woman, mm-hmm. which is a great tune, but it's in a nasty key. Mm. And he like gave me the music, and I didn't have a long time to do it, to learn it. Hmm. But I like pushed myself. I wanted to do this for Jill.
Yeah.
And I learned this tune. And we played it. And just reflecting back on that, I was like, it was probably the first time that I played any music in this key. And it's like 6 or 7 flats. Mm-hmm. So reading the music is just so nasty mm-hmm. for some people. Mm-hmm. And that was a great moment of like, oh, this is like in my capability. Mm-hmm. And then I, around that same time, maybe that exact same summer, Joe and my other counselor, James, mm-hmm. they had been telling me about Ben Folds for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Summer, I got hooked on Ben Folds. Mm-hmm. So I went back home, and I pretty much bought these like transcriptions of Ben Folds 5 and Ben Folds like Songs for Silverman. Mm. the piano parts that he was playing. Mm-hmm. And I like learn every single tune. Mm-hmm. And that got me interested enough to start piano lessons again. Mm-hmm. I was at a conservatory with a nun. Mm-hmm. Sister Mary Carroll.
Did you like her?
I loved her. She's so sweet. She's the best.
Literally never ever heard anybody say I loved my nun teacher. Oh, like yeah. It's so rare.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, she was just absolutely just salt of the earth, so sweet.
She was and a dope sister.
Yeah.
Whoopi Goldberg.
That's right. Pretty different than that, but she was really kind to me, and she was just like totally open to me coming back and mm-hmm. me leaving when I wanted to. I'm sure she was heartbroken at the time. Uh-huh. But so I came back, and we went back. I mean, she taught straight classical music. Wow. So I was back in playing classical music.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I was like, so at this point, I'm like, I'm liking playing piano now.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
But it still was not. I didn't like identify uh-huh. with it really at this point. Mm-hmm. I probably identified as a musician, mm-hmm. as like I like music, mm-hmm. but not as a pianist. Mm-hmm. And there was an easy through line for me to go to Lawrence University. Do you know what that is?
No.
Lawrence University is a private conservatory school, probably one of the best in the Midwest, mm. in Wisconsin, in Appleton.
Gotcha.
So it's like a really nice music school. Mm-hmm. They have incredible teachers there, and mm-hmm. It's got a lot of composition, jazz, mm-hmm. but you know, that's pretty fresh. And mm. for a long time, it was classical music mm-hmm. focused, and that was not for me. And so I didn't even apply. Hmm. It was kind of an expectation that I was going to try or go there, maybe.
Because it's the best.
Yeah.
It's so-called.
And my sister was just like, you should do this. Uh-huh. And but I didn't.
Yeah.
And I had another friend, kind of a family friend, that was going to UW Oshkosh at the time. And at Oshkosh, there's a program called Recording Technology, hmm. which is one of the only four-year bachelor's programs in the country. Hmm. There's probably a few more now, but at the time, really one of the only ones that you could get a bachelor's of music and focused in on recording technology.
Wow. So you get a real skill.
What?
So you get a real skill.
Yeah, and also something that's like I like technology. Mm. I like computers, video mm-hmm. games. I was like, oh, like, that sounds cool. I could do that. Mm-hmm. And then I'm in music, but I don't have to play classical music. Mm-hmm. And so I applied super late to go there, got in. And the piano teacher there he became the reason that I found this love, really. Mm-hmm. So Ellie Coleman, he is the professor there still. Mm-hmm. And he and I just totally connected. Mm-hmm. And classical music, but he was giving me things that I had never heard of. Composers, a lot of Russian, Eastern European.
Gotcha.
And Russian music that was that's just like way up. Is that my phone?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's all right. The bells.
The bells. Relax. That's funny. Okay.
So it was the exposure that he was kind of giving you.
Yeah, and like, and the right teacher just makes all the difference. I mean, yeah. Like I said, I love sister, but mm-hmm. Ellie and I, we had similar tastes, mm-hmm. and he like really pushed me. Mm-hmm. So he very easily could have, and there were a lot of people that went to the recording technology program that their focus is not on playing. Mm. They had to play mm-hmm. just because you still have to go through like aural skills theory, right. You have to put on a recital.
Okay.
But that was really what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I pretty quickly learned like recording technology is cool. I'm glad I have these skills, but I want to play.
Your heart was in the music.
Totally.
Yeah.
So he, few of the composers that he gave me, that was, there's two more parts two more bits to this. My freshman year, he performed. He played a concerto with the Oshkosh Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. So he was up there playing Grieg piano concerto. I never heard this piece. Mm-hmm. Blew my mind. I mean, I was like in tears seeing this. It was so good.
Yeah.
And I was effusive towards him. And I was just like, you know, that was so unbelievable. And he goes, you should play it. And I was just like, ha, you know, like, what? Mm-hmm. No way. But I got the music and I like picked at it. I just slowly picked at it for a couple years, probably 3 years, I think.
Wow.
And like never, not totally seriously, just like bit by bit. And then I came to him one semester and I was like, Ellie, I've been working on this. Like, can I show you? And he immediately was like, we're doing this. Like, you're going to audition for the concerto competition. And yeah. And so I learned the movement. I auditioned for the competition. I won. I performed with the UW orchestra. And in that moment, I was like, oh, like, okay. You know, I've had these teachers telling me that I was good. But then to like, I never really competed. And so then to like win this competition, I was like, oh, maybe other people think, not just my own teachers, that like I can do this. So that was really cool to kind of witness that. Just look back and say, okay, this piece that seemed impossible. And last scenario that was very formative was, I had a really good friend in high school that when I told that I played piano, he's like, oh, and he was Polish. And he was like, oh, do you know Chopin? Like, check this out. And he showed me a video of Evgeny Kissin playing Chopin Revolutionary Etude. It's this incredible virtuosic piece that I was like, no, bro, I'm not playing anything like that. Like, not even close. I've never even seen anyone play piano like that. You just blew my mind. I don't, like, I can't even wrap my head around it. And he died suddenly when I was a senior in high school.
This friend?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that broke my heart. And that piece that he showed me was another one that I just like had in my mind. And I was just like, I gotta learn this piece. So I like, it was way too hard for me. But I like started playing it. And then actually that's kind of a way I got into composition too, because I started playing it, but it was too hard. So I started like stealing ideas, the chord progression from it to play. And then eventually I did learn the piece, and that was still under Ellie and in my undergrad when I finally actually performed that piece and I won like a honors competition with it. And so those two pieces, I just like, you know, just kind of being able to witness the evolution of like things that seem impossible that I would love to do, but you can't wrap your head around. And then you just did it. And then feeling, but also like loving it, like it's still art. So playing these pieces and just absolutely loving this type of music is like, oh, this is there anything better? And so I usually tell people that I really feel like I started practicing like now, like through all of that when I became about 21, I started like, that's when I was like, okay, this is, I want to play. I want to play and write and yeah.
With the composing part, like composing your own music, you know, like, did you envision yourself doing or being somebody or like, yeah, like I understand that you were kind of taking from this tune and then sort of teaching yourself how to compose by using this as inspo, but like,
Did you have like a certain vision in mind when you were composing? Like,
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
To do something with it or to be somebody with it, or...
I think I always, for whatever reason, had like kind of a negative attitude towards cover bands. It's like I never really wanted to be in a band that just played other people's music.
Right.
And like all the music that I loved, they, like, other people wrote.
Yeah.
And it was like, they should do it. They sound better than me. Yeah. I want to hear them do it.
Yeah.
I want to hear somebody else do it. Yeah. Especially not like the one for one attempts. Like arrangements of things. Now I'm, like I said, I'm arranging Charlie Brown music right mm-hmm. now. So arrangements of things I'm in love with at this point. But the cover idea never intrigued me. So
what's the difference?
Well, like it's just like
arrangement and cover.
What?
Arrangement versus cover.
It's really like, you're grasping at straws almost. Like you could use those in exactly
the same term. I understand. Okay.
But the kind of colloquial version would be a cover is like a band just doing it the way that the other band did.
Right. Like,
but they're just doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I understand.
Versus an arrangement is where you mess with it of some sort. In fact, you could do things that are like so far fetched from the original.
Right.
And who knows if that's gonna be successful or not.
Gotcha.
Because if you're destroying it so much, is it really that tune? Is it really good at all?
Yeah.
But the idea of arranging it is kind of adding your own voice to it and making it, and then you can put it for other instruments.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like Such Great Heights. Mm-hmm. That's a great cover. Mm-hmm. It was a Postal Service tune.
Yeah.
And then the cover of it, that's an arrangement.
Oh.
Like, that's so different.
Hmm.
You know, that's a worthy arrangement, I would say. So, it just, like, never stood out to me. It was always kind of like, if I'm going to play music that's not, I don't know, classical at the time, that was kind of my only two frames of reference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm going to play pop music, I want to play my own.
Yeah.
If I'm going to play classical music, it takes too long. It's already hard enough just to learn those notes.
Understood. Yeah. 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 Well, because you're an artist. Yeah. You want to write your own original music and do your own original thing, have your own, put your own flavor out there.
Yeah.
Be like, this is Jason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like my, that's the dream, is to create something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you start Mr. Chair?
2016.
Okay.
That was, actually, it was the three other founding members of Mr. Chair played a gig.
Mm.
Ben, Mike, and Mark, they played a gig at Alchemy.
Mm.
And I knew all of them somewhat. And it was just a one-off. They had just like, I had already seen Mark in a different band play. I heard of Ben's name and I knew Mike. And I went to that gig and it was killing. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided that maybe it'd be nice to have someone to flesh out the harmony.
Mm.
And I was there, one of the few people there.
Mm-hmm.
So my name was easily popped in their head, I think. And then we started rehearsing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was kind of that was the start.
Pretty sweet. Yeah. How many bands are you in?
I mean, bands that, like, bands that, like, off the top of my head that feel like I have a voice, would be Mr. Chair. All of Mr. Chair's offshoots, so, like, Serena is an offshoot. Spectaculous. Serena's like a kind of operatic, Filipino operatic.
Wow.
Offshoot. Spectaculous is hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
Offshoot. I have a group called Wonderporium, which is like ambient electronic music.
Nice.
I play with Luca. Luca's an incredible guitar player in town, and we play his tunes, but he is very open to me doing whatever I want, and I love that music, so it feels like I can really add something and share my voice in with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like various duo projects. Ben and I have played as duo sometimes. My bud John Arabagon, he's a sax player, we've played a few times as duo. Mm-hmm. Totally improvised.
Mm-hmm.
Duo, and that is like, it's so fun.
Yeah.
And terrifying, but fun.
You have like a very collaborative sort of like energy and spirit. You're always down to just be like, what shape of puzzle am I, and what are you, and let's see if we match, and how can we make something and build something?
Yeah, and I would have to give Ellie credit for that, because Ellie, he told me that a long time ago, which is just like, playing music, like, you could be in a practice room by yourself working on Chopin, Prokofiev, all this stuff, and then you perform on stage by yourself, and it's hard as hell, and it's fun, and people are mystified by it. But there's something that's more fun about doing it with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You get people on stage, you hear their voice, you're communicating in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the collaboration. He was very much about collaborative music and playing chamber music.
Mm-hmm.
And and I just think it's so fun.
It is very fun. It's very intimate, too, because you're sharing a language, you know, outside of you, and you're building something in that space together, and it's a sound, right? And it's, sound is, like, very penetrating. It, like, affects everything in that space, and human bodies especially, you know, and changes the vibe, like, changes the atmosphere and everything is very powerful.
Oh yeah.
And I think there's a beauty to that. Like with I don't know. I do a lot of like solitary stuff.
Mm.
You know, like stand up is very solitary. Mm. Writing is very solitary.
Stand up, I guess, in the same way that I called like solo performing solitary. Like but you're not really reacting in real time to the audience as a solo performer. Let's say classical performer, because jazz might be different and you get a little more interaction. Like a pop singer, one dude with a guitar is like, he's like staring at the crowd too and like asking for their attention.
Mm-hmm.
But stand up, like, don't you need, the crowd is like,
you need them.
You need them. Without it,
you're nothing.
You're fucked. I mean, if you don't have that crowd like with you.
Yeah, you do.
But it feels solitary because it's...
Solitary in terms of like the delivery and the, you know, that, all that. Mm. But yeah, it is, you're right. It is still collaborative, you know, like when you are performing on a stage, that space, like you have like the house manager, you know, you have people who do the lights and like, you know, do the music cues and, you know, usher people, you have like servers bringing drinks, you know, like that's still an atmosphere and they're all part of it. And yeah, people and their laughter and their reaction is like an absolute necessity, you know, but yeah, I guess you're right. Like it's very solitary and solo, but like I don't know, in some cases, like, more selfish, you know, like, we're very selfish about that attention. It's like, no, nobody, like, shut up, everybody, just like, only me, only this. Yeah. And it's a different kind of vibe, I think, versus like music, where it's like you want to play all together. It's like, oh, this is, we all need to do this together in this way. A thing that like with John Lurie, the Lounge Lizards band lead, John Lurie, he said something interesting, because he's now in his 70s, I think, late 60s, early 70s, and he's now living in some like tropical island because he has like Lyme disease, and he doesn't have as much energy anymore to play regularly and do gigs and tour and stuff. So he's like kind of chilled out in this like tropical island. But for his TV show, which was on Max, it's called Painting with John. And I think I told you about this. He had a show called Fishing with John, which is him just going out fishing with like Tom Waits or like Dennis Hopper or, you know, Matt Dillon. And it's just literally them fishing.
Yeah.
That's the whole TV show.
Yep.
And then I was watching that on a DVD, but with the director's commentary. And that was so much more entertaining than just the show. Like, listening to his stories about, oh, when we were doing this and when we were doing that, and this is how Matt was feeling, this is how Tom was feeling, like, Tom and I stopped speaking to each other after this, da 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 da. All these little stories made the show so much richer. And so the guy who made all these, not Wolf of Wall Street, he did, like, Up, Don't Look Up, this fucking filmmaker.
Big Short,
that dude. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
He used to be Will Ferrell's bestie,
yeah, and then they broke up.
No.
Something?
It's something different. Anyway, that director, he became executive producer on John Lurie's new show called Painting with John, because John doesn't have as much energy to play music all the time, so he's been watercoloring. And he does this show similarly to the director's commentary of Fishing with John. He just tells stories while painting. And he just says like such amazing, wonderful stories. And one of the things that he said, and I don't know if you could relate, but it's like the one thing, like playing with older musicians now that we're all older, the one thing that we love, that I love, is like there's no more noodling. You know, we sit down and we just get to it. Nobody's sitting there like trying to do his own thing anymore, like figuring something out. It's like we just get to it.
Yeah.
And it's so nice.
Yeah.
Do you relate?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that I'm totally there. There's definitely still a lot of noodling going on.
So what's the motive behind noodling? What's going on?
Well, it depends. I mean, let's assume he's talking about performing and noodling. It's easy to feel a need to fill space. Like in music, you assume that the act is making sound. And we all know, any professional musician knows, like, there are rests. There's time when it's not happening. But let's say if you're improvising, it's just very easy to feel a need. If there's any downtime, if there's a need to, like, for someone to fill that space. Now, let's say you're going and you're playing, it's easy for you to feel like you have to keep doing things. You have to keep... And I think that's an easy trap to fall into, one I fall into, definitely. And it is definitely detrimental. Like, you want to let it breathe. And in fact, one of the, that group Wonderporium is a really awesome exercise and a great chance when I play with them to force myself not to do that. Because it's minimalist in a way. So it's minimalist music. It's repetitive. And knowing that as that repetition goes on and on, that then it's a small change. There's no noodling. It's the smallest change that makes a massive difference. And so, yeah, it's like It also reminds me of, like, you know, older folks who don't feel the need to say a lot. And when they do, it's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you know what you want to say and you're confident, you don't need to bullshit and say, spew a bunch of, like, talk highly of yourself or, like, try and show off. You just say what is necessary at the right time, and it's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is definitely a mature approach and comes mm-hmm. with age.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. And just like veteran status, right? Like these mm-hmm. guys, these musicians, they've been musicians for like 50 years.
Yeah.
And at this point, it's like, you know, John will say one or two things and they're all on the same page and mm-hmm. they just go right in. Mm-hmm. And it sounds gorgeous.
Right.
It sounds as if they've been rehearsing, but no, it's just that they've all played with one another multiple times before over the years, you mm-hmm. know, on and off, on and off, on and off. So when they get together in a room, they just know exactly how to meet one another.
Yeah, totally.
In this gorgeous way. Yeah, it's something really beautiful about that, that, you know, it's like specific to musicians, I think. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and it, especially when you get used to people that you play with, you know, yeah. you know their voice.
Yeah.
You can expect things.
Yeah.
And you can roll with the unexpected.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it's just like Mr. Chair at this point, Ben, Mike, and I, we have a really solid, like, ability to communicate.
Yeah.
With saying very little, and
yeah.
we're tight in a certain way that it just takes almost 10 years to get there, mm-hmm. and it will remain like the, it just gets better and better as mm-hmm. it goes on. So mm-hmm. if you ever get a chance, like when you hear my friend Arun just told me that there's this trio coming to play in Milwaukee, and these guys have been playing together for I don't know how long, decades.
Mm-hmm.
And it just it's just better at that point.
Yeah.
Because they know when to give you that space, when to kind of leave time for you or
yeah.
interject.
Right.
You ever listen to Dave Brubeck and Paul Desmond? I think they did this so perfectly. Dave was a pianist, Paul was a saxophonist. And they often would do these like, kind of, they would like solo at the same time.
Mm.
They do that. It's like trading back and forth, but it's not like planned,
mm-hmm.
but they just so perfectly, like, it's almost like it was a composed line.
Yeah.
That is all improvised.
Yeah.
Because they just spoke exactly the same language.
Yeah.
It's stunning.
It's like telepathy. Like mm-hmm. they're kind of communicating on another level.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did see this with, sometimes I'll see this with like, I don't know, podcasters, like comedian podcasters, if they're like, or improv people, if they're constantly improvising with each other for a long time, then they know how to like play with each other and banter on stage. I remember seeing that with like two comedians that I know, and I was like, afterwards, because I know them, I was like, did you guys like pre-plan anything? He's like, mm-mm. We've just been podcasting for so long, we just know what to expect and when to go in. And so yeah, like I guess there's that example, but with music it's different, you know. This is a feel.
Yeah. And it's almost like it's necessary
in yeah.
music.
How do you find new music or discover new music?
I don't even know. There's like too much. there's too much. I mean, I find pretty much all of my news and things via Reddit, which is like way too
wow
insular. So it's not a good place to do that. I don't know, I like, oh, and YouTube, I'm mm-hmm. definitely down to like click on some of the recommended things, but I still feel like I'm going through like the basics. John Lurie.
Lurie, L-U-R-I-E.
Lurie. That one's like a little more off to the side, but you could easily have brought up like any of the main prog bands of the 70s and been like, you would definitely know these guys. And I would have been like, definitely don't. You know, I feel like I'm still just like coming to hear things that I should know. And yeah, and there's, I'm sure I have my own catalog of the things that I actually know, but it still is like, it's missing. So I see all the holes. And so I'm just trying to fill in those holes.
Who are your, like, the greats for you? Or who are you listening to a lot lately?
I have to look at my phone. Right now, I'm listening to Vince Guaraldi. He is the guy that wrote all the music for Charlie Brown. So we're playing all this. I'm like doing, someone called it a method musician. I'm like listening to everything. I'm reading his biography.
Yeah. What do you get? Like, what's he about? What, like, what are you learning about him that's like clicking with you?
I think that he, so he got really popular for Peanuts, right? And I think he gets a bad rap for being too popular. And the style is not, it's not like cutting edge, really. It was in a certain way, in the way that he was at the forefront of like infusing Brazilian bossa nova with jazz. He wasn't the first one to do it, but he was into this music. And it just feels so good. I love Latin music and Latin jazz, and he was doing it, and he was doing it in a way that's just like, it just feels good. And it kind of has that feeling of like, he didn't do too much. He was just all about doing the right thing at the right time. And so
The music in Peanuts is like, it does sound like bare, but it's still full.
It's pretty simple. It is pretty simple. I mean, it's piano trio. So it's acoustic, piano, bass, and drums. And it's very light. It's lightly orchestrated. Lightness again.
Which is why you guys are a good fit for playing
the music. Well, I'm trying to figure it out. It literally comes up every time we play it. Like, we got to be light. Like, I'm trying.
Okay. No, I love that. And it's interesting how you say, like, people didn't like him because he was popular.
I think he just really, he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. He was great. And so I'm learning that now, and I'm loving it. So I'm like, I've listened to nearly every one of his albums that he was a leader of. And I have to dive into, he played with his great band leader Cal Tater, or Tater, I don't know how to say his last name. And so he was like a sideman in Cal's group. And so I have to go back and listen to all that. And then also I got to go back and listen to all his influences. You got to find the step back. And so that, then it opens up the world of Bud Powell. He was a big fan of Bud Powell. He's like one of the great jazz bebop pianists ever. And I love Bud, but I would say that I know just a little. So that's something that I know I need to dive into. So like when I'm done with this, I'll probably spend a few months just listening to Bud.
That's interesting, because I actually, so I love like Cat Power and like PJ Harvey, and they always cite like Patti Smith as their influence. I love PJ Harvey and Cat Power's music, but I'm not a fan of Patti Smith's music, you know, which is interesting. But it's like, you can see like the lineage. And it's interesting how, even though there's a lineage, it's like generationally speaking, or, you know, whatever, it's like, no, I prefer these gals. I respect Patti Smith as a god, but these are the chicks who speak to me in terms of their music. It's interesting.
And it's always through lines. There's like no, there's no island of, or very few, I would say, of like complete originality. And so, and we are always going to have our preferred taste, you yeah. know? So, yeah, I mean, I at this point, I prefer Vince over Bud.
Yeah.
But I, like, I still love Bud. I totally respect, I mean, his... Yeah, so it's...
Yeah.
You just kind of... You have your own taste.
It's interesting. No, okay. So when you're listening to, like, Vince's, like, collection, body of work...
Yeah.
Just by listening to his music, how would you describe this person? Like, what's his personality like, or what's his characteristics like, or what kind of figure comes to mind?
Feel good. Mm-hmm. He's a feel good guy.
Hmm.
It, like, there's no, like, very little harshness or darkness to his music.
Not a melancholic guy.
Not really.
Mm.
Even, yeah, not really. I, like, the Charlie Brown Christmas is actually super melancholy.
Mm-hmm.
That music is. So he gets there, but it just always has this kind of very approachable. Very, like, somebody that you want to... I don't know too much about how he was as a person just yet. I just got the biography. We're starting it now. It's also like a textbook.
Yeah, who cares about the bio? It's more like from the music that you hear, like, this is the kind of person that's coming to mind. Like, if you were to write his biography based on just what you've been hearing, like, what would you say? You know?
That's interesting.
Like, what did he like to eat? Why is Christmas so melancholic compared to the other stuff? What happened at Christmas?
The whole point of music is that we don't talk about that. You let the music do that.
You let the music speak.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, that's a good point. All right. Okay, I'm gonna play a little game with you and then we'll wrap up, all right? Okay. So I do this with all of my guests, and I usually only reserve this for my comedian guests, but, you know, you're a guy of levity and light, so we're gonna noodle around and see what comes through,
okay?
So I'm just gonna ask you, like, a question, like, give you a scenario.
Yeah.
Based on this scenario and this character, right? Like, what would you be if you were this person in this situation? That's what
would I be?
What would you do?
Oh, what would I do?
I'm going to give you a situation.
Okay.
And your character. And it's like, if you were this person, what would you do in this situation? That's pretty much it.
Okay.
And the scenes are all based on this one specific K-drama called Bon Appetit, Your Majesty. Very, very popular show at the moment.
I didn't watch it.
You don't have to. Okay. It's better that they don't watch it, actually. Okay. So, okay, let's say you're a Korean chef. You're specializing in French cuisine, and you are on this television competition, a cooking show, and you win first place. Ooh. Like, you're top chef, all right? Like, you impress them with your ability to, like, hybridize certain techniques and flavors and yada, 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 and you won, all right? So, you're now, like a chef with a star, and you're about to make it big. Any restaurant you open, it's gonna be like a top hit, all right? Mm. So you're on your flight going from France back home to Seoul, and in the middle of your flight, something happens, and you end up in the middle of the woods, and it's not the time period that you are in. It's no longer 2025. Mm. It's like 1300s or something.
Mm.
And there's a man on a horse about to shoot an arrow through your shoulder because he thinks you're a ghost because you're dressed funny and you're saying words that he doesn't understand. You have a cell phone. He doesn't know what this is. He's about to kill you. What do you do?
Spatula. Hit the bow, the arrow, deflect it away from my shoulder. And then I say, I'll just speak in English because I don't know any other languages.
Yeah.
Why? I would do this, maybe. Say what?
Why?
And then I go like this.
No, no.
Yeah, no, no. But also, 1 second, maybe. Hold on. Okay. And then I would cook him a delicious meal.
Oh.
A succulent, do you know that? A succulent Chinese meal.
A succulent Chinese meal.
No, I know it's Korean, but you gotta see that. No. Yeah, then you cook for the guy. What else skills do I have? I gotta find a pot. It's probably no pot. So coconut, it's an island. But we were going from, so where was this, like the, this is like the island south of India, the one with all those what is that called? You know what I'm talking about, where there's like a, there's like an untouched tribe in, oh, that, in that island south of India, off, uh-huh, the coast of India. So is that where we are? So I'd probably save the arrow.
Mm.
That was probably, it's probably useful cooking tool of some sort. Kebab. Yeah. Maybe we can make a kebab with that. Yeah, we probably only need to like grill some some fish.
Okay.
Could catch some fish with that arrow.
So you go from violence just to kebabs.
I was not being violent.
Yeah.
I was
stopping violence and being like kebab.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
We don't, we're not going to speak the same language.
No, you are.
Oh, we do speak the same, yeah, language. Oh,
yeah. Okay. It's 1300s Korea.
Oh.
And this guy doesn't know.
Oh.
You're dressed funny, like.
You say, I'm from the future.
Yeah. And you're saying shit like that. And yes, he's like, I got to kill this witch.
And I am expert with a spatula in defense. So he's not going to hurt me.
Okay.
And maybe he gets a little pat on the face if he gets too close.
Okay.
He's too aggressive.
All right.
So, you gotta like,
yeah,
back off.
Set your boundaries.
That's right.
All right.
And then, but then you cook him a meal.
Yeah, a nice kebab.
Yeah.
With the arrow. Beautiful. Okay. Next question.
Okay.
Let's say.
Do they all have that much setup?
Pretty much.
Okay.
So I'm ready. Let's say
I gotta like
this guy on the horse. Turns out he's the king. He's the king of the nation.
Okay.
And you had read his history, actually.
Okay.
In history, he has gone down as a tyrant.
Oh, shit.
Like, he, like, beheads people, like, randomly. He just, like, doesn't give a shit, right? So you should be terrified of this man.
Okay.
But through your cooking and through your wit, you do kind of get on his good side, right?
Okay.
But you still don't know, like, how you're going to get back to your timeline, how you're going to get home. Like, you don't know what's going to happen to you, right? And again, this man is, like, a tyrant.
Yeah.
And very powerful.
Yeah.
He brings you to his kingdom.
Yes.
And throws you in prison.
Yes.
Right? You don't know what's going to happen.
Yes.
Suddenly, these people, they drag you out, and they throw you down in front of the king, and all these court people are like, you should kill this bitch. What do you do?
Don't. Hold on. Let me prove my worth. I will make you a meal for everyone that will be delicious. And then you poison him. If he's a real tyrant, now's your opportunity.
You gotta get rid of him. You gotta clean it up.
Maybe not. Maybe not. I don't know the level of tyranny, but if he's a real bad guy, you got a chance here. I'll think about it. But maybe not right then. Maybe you have to, like, you gotta, like, input. You gotta.
Mm-hmm.
Dive in. You got to get out of this scenario first. So maybe it's not a poisoning right at the start. Maybe it's a good meal for everybody.
Yeah.
And they then hire you. You become the court.
Yeah. It's as if you've seen the show, because that's literally basically what happens. The king, who has tasted your food, he says, all right, like, I'm not going to kill her. Actually, she's going to now be my head chef.
Yeah.
Right? And then now she's... All right. So you, let's say you're the head chef now. Okay. Yeah. You're still in this world. You're in this timeline.
Yeah.
You don't know anybody. You don't know what the hell's going on. You're just stuck here.
Yeah.
Head chef. But the thing is, there are already head chefs of the court.
Yeah,
and when you go into the kitchen, all of them hate your guts, and none of them want to cooperate with you. What do you do? So you want Side Story?
Yeah, exactly. It's like the two sets of
cooks.
Yeah. Like in the white outfits, and then the black like that.
Yeah.
They work in the industrial kitchens.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I see. So yeah, we write a tune, we bust into a song. I'll write it. Yeah, I don't know. Well, you combine. You get this, you don't only have French, Korean fusion, but now you have like timeline fusion, which would be cool. So you have like, you have the fusion of, I don't know, like a drumstick the size of your head, which is probably what they're like eating.
A mutton chop.
Yeah, exactly. Plus, you know, like creme brulee. I don't know any, I know so little about food.
Okay, mutton chops and creme brulee. And yeah, it's like, now we all get along.
That's right.
All
right,
great solution. All right. This is great. All right. Now, let's say there is a consort, all right? It's like, she's not the queen.
Mm.
She's like a side piece, right? Like a concubine, right? The king's concubine, side piece.
Yep.
Hates your guts.
Oh, shit.
She's like, the hell is this fucking trollop doing in my space? Yeah. Like, the king's all, like, you know, googly-eyed with her. Like, you hate, like, she hates you, right? So she's like, lining up all these little challenges for you.
Oh, cool.
Right? And one of the things is actually, like, your life is now on the line because you cooked a meal that the king loves for both the king and the king's younger brother. And the younger brother's, like, very young. He's, like, a 10-year-old boy.
Yeah.
And the little boy gets very sick after eating your, excuse me, your meal. And so this consort chick is like, oh, it was the chef's fault. She fed him the last meal. And now your life is on the line. What do you do?
Well, you got leverage on this girl. Does the queen know about her? Is the concubine, like, out in the open, or is
there is no queen yet, actually, weirdly.
Oh, so is it a concubine, or just...
Yeah, she's just, like, a side piece hanging around.
But she's not, like...
She's not the queen.
Married. She's not...
No.
There hasn't been an engagement.
No.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'm screwed.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What?
Oh, boy. Hopefully, I... had on my person Pepto-Bismol that I could offer the kid
some Tums.
Like, oh, yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, wait. It's a little pink bottle.
Magical pink solution.
I don't really leave home without the Pepto-Bismol.
Really?
It's, yeah.
Oh, my God.
When I fly.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's the best. So there's a good chance I had it anyways. But if I don't have that, well, we're going to have to dress up as the kid and pretend to be him and for a minute while he's getting better.
Oh.
So we put on like the pants roll and we become the boy
drag king.
That's right.
Yeah.
And pretend like we're healthy. Just for the brief time
as while he's recovering.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, great answer. All right, last question.
Okay.
Let's say the king doesn't have a queen yet. Okay. He has this side piece who's like all up in his, but he's like not into her. All right. She like did this power move thing, doesn't like her. The king actually digs you.
Oh.
He's like, I like you.
Yeah.
You're pretty great.
Yeah.
I like your food. Easy on the eye.
Yeah.
We get along.
Yeah.
Like, I want you to be my queen. I want you to marry me.
Okay.
But you have a father back in your timeline.
Yeah.
You have a life. You won Top Chef. You have a restaurant. You have dreams and goals.
Mm.
Kind of feeling torn. What do you do?
Well, there's very little chance we're getting back to where we came from. So, I'm not sure how much it matters. You could, like, remember those people, but you're pretty much screwed. How the fuck are you getting back? You're not... There's no way here. There's no way back.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Okay.
It depends on the level of tyranny with this guy. I don't know. If he's a bad guy, it's like Kill Bill. You're like, you don't forget the task at hand.
All right. So you don't say yes. You're going to kill this guy instead of marrying him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We probably better to just take over the take. Yeah, to just usurp the kingdom.
Oh.
Than to.
And then you become king.
Exactly.
While pretending to be the younger brother.
Well, he's probably better at this point.
So you kill him too.
If it's that bad, then maybe I should stop cooking.
So you have to kill him too, because he's next in line. If the king dies, his younger brother's next in line. Oh, that's
true. Yeah, there's a complication there. But complication. You do already have the history of pretending to be him, and maybe he doesn't even want the power.
Yeah.
Maybe he's a good guy. So then you guys can like actually get together. Or we can actually get together.
Yeah.
And we can like trade places. We have like a we could like.
Okay. Yeah. I like this.
Yeah.
It's a crazier story than it began, so it's way better.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Then it began like, well, when are you? Yeah. What happens in the show? Spoiler alert.
She's like torn. She's just torn. I don't know. I'm not gonna give away the ending. Okay. But yeah, they are very torn. All right. This is great. Jason, it's so lovely to have you here. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.